Good evening. It's half past six, and we will begin this meeting of the Economic Development and Planning Scrutiny Committee. Minutes to come first. Anybody have any comments on the minutes? Can I sign them? Yes, there's lots of nods, so I'll sign them. Apologies.
Councillor Nixon substituted by Councillor Thorley, and Councillor Phillips substituted by Councillor Aspin.
Very good. Welcome to you both. Members' item. Oh no, Councillor Session. No, start again. Public question time, Councillor Session. Members' items and called in items are all nil. Which takes us straight to officers' reports, development management, improvement, and hand over.
So we're here to give you an update on the DM improvement project.
Just explain yourself for the members. Oh, sorry. Who are new.
Hi, yes, I'm Lucy Gibbs. I'm the client solutions director at Mondrem Community Interest Company, and we've been your partner on the DM improvement project for the last year or so.
Brilliant.
So, just a bit of a background about the improvement project itself. There was a review that we did in at the end of 2024 that took a sort of health check of the planning service and made some recommendations. As it says there, we've been focused on increasing, improving productivity, which is decisions per person per day, not how hard people are working. It's a metric that we take. Efficiency in processes and systems, the customer experience, staff's well-being, and the financial sustainability of the service. In February this year, we introduced a new operational management framework, and you have new performance reports that go as high up in the organisation as needs to see them. And throughout February to June, we have designed, and the team have delivered service improvement projects. So that's process changes, new approaches to validation, new approaches to accepting amendments, a new pre-application advice service, and some new, more consistent ways of working with your consultee departments. That's highways, ecology, environmental health, people like that, trees. And we've now got some data flows that can show the balance between the workload the team has and the capacity they have to do that work. Does anybody want to? Just ask me questions per slide if there's anything that you want to that doesn't seem clear. Is that all right rather than going backwards and forwards?
Okay. Anybody got any questions?
So I've just mentioned a few of the things that we have delivered. So we've got those weekly data driven operational management meetings, a new KPI framework which gets produced every week using Copilot to automate the bits that we can. Gathering the data is still quite manual for that. The service has found some capacity to improve your core system, the case management system, which is called Uniform. The project has done the audit, found the things and prioritised the order in which they should be changed, and is in the process of having some changes made. There is some background things that your IT department are having to iron out to actually make it work, but the functionality is there and it should work in the next couple of weeks. Enabling things like being able to send emails to consultees and monitor the responses from the system rather than having to copy and paste everything between Outlook and with any sort of slowdown and mistakes that might lead to. You've got a new performance dashboard, new ways to monitor workload. Of course, those things on their own don't improve performance, but they at least highlight how good or bad things are. The team have written a customer charter. Now, it's not published on the website yet, or they've not released it to be published yet to your customers, but they are acting as if it was in place already. So that was in the last couple of weeks, and as soon as they have taken it through that test phase, then they will be happy to share that with you and publish it. There's a new way to communicate with customers that have sent you planning applications in. There's some key points of contact at which the case officer will contact the customer to say things like, I'm looking at your application, looks like we're going to the target date, everything's fine, you'll hear from us next when you get your decision. Or, I'm looking at your application, everything isn't fine, either some problem with consultee responses or something that I've got to figure out. I'm chasing them, you don't need to chase me, I'm on it, just to give them confidence and a bit of clarity around timescales where they can. It's not always possible to be absolutely firm with timescales because you're depending on people that are outside of the service. We've got a new approach for validation, meaning that everybody's working in exactly the same way now. Same thing for amendments and pre-application advice. Again, you haven't launched your pre-app service formally yet, but if anybody's asking for it, it's being given. You've got a new planning enforcement policy, which you undoubtedly saw, that was some time ago. And the team have also got a stakeholder management approach and how they will communicate with stakeholders too. So all of those things are, most of those things are in their infancy or not launched yet, but fully designed and being tested. The productivity through the project has increased by 34%, which is great. You're making better use of the people that you've got. But your validation backlog remains way too high. The validation queue remains way too long. It's very difficult to do proactive communication within that validation queue because you need all your validators validating. And all of those customer improvements, as it says there, now need to be implemented. So rolled out fully, launched, talked about, and promoted. Quite a lot of content there, sorry. And I'm trying not to use jargon as well. I'm aware I'm not a planner, but I do live my life with planners. And so if there's any of that that doesn't make any sense, please do let me know.
Going back to the, if I may, Chair.
Sure.
Going back to what you referred to as in the communication between the planner and the applicant. Is that only going to be instigated from the planner's point of view? Is there a facility where the applicant can sort of log on or communicate from their point of view?
We discourage applicants from sending lots of emails in. I mean, they can, of course. They can email in whenever they like. Tend to discourage that. This is an approach throughout, it's not necessarily just at Stafford, because planning is one of those disciplines where you need a bit of headspace. You're taking in a lot of complex information from a lot of different sources, and anything that interrupts that flow, and that you know if you're expected to reply straight away when actually you've got your head right into a case and you're trying to figure everything out, it really does slow everything down. So it's we discourage coming in and chasing, but we're trying to get ahead of that by stopping any reason why anybody might chase, trying to make sure that the website's got all of the information that they can self-serve on. They can see all the comments that have come in from consultees as they come in. They can see any documentation that has been provided, produced. They can see any representations that have been made, and so they can get a sense of how that assessment's going, you know, themselves. But we're trying to get the main complaint is about they don't know what time scales things are working to. Is it 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years? You know, they can't manage in that environment. And so most of the chases are around time scales, which is why it's so important to have that two stage. You know, as soon as it gets allocated to a case officer, they get in touch, say, I know you've had the acknowledgement letter with my name on it, but I am that person. You know, I do exist. I am a human, and I am working on it. I've had a look, you know, and it's in the system. I just need to wait for the consultee responses to come in or the publicity period to expire to see if anybody's going to make any representations against it. And then again, when that publicity period, that consultation period has expired, that's the next step at which they get in touch. And the first approach is on the phone. If you've got a phone in for the customer or their agent, give them a call, just let them know what's going on, follow up with an email so they've got an in-writing trail that they can show to their customers if needs be.
So for an applicant, mm-hmm. the only way they'll be able to see, unless they get a communication from the planner, the only way they'd be able to track it themselves is by going through the planning
public access portal. Yeah.
And there's nothing we can put on there as a sort of tracking document or anything like that, I suppose. I'm just thinking of something where the applicant can just go in and the first thing is a tracking document which sort of says where they are.
Yeah. I was looking at Cheshire, funny you should say that actually, I was looking at Cheshire West and Chester's website, their public access portal, today. And I don't know what back office system they use, I've never actually worked with them, but I've sent them an email to go, wow, your public access portal is clear. like for a layperson, you can just clearly see they publish their weekly list on there. They publish what officers' caseloads are as well, so you can see if your case officer has got loads of work on their plate. I don't know how they make that possible. I've never seen that with a uniform using council. If they've got uniform, I am going to be really all over it. How on earth are you doing that then? How would you extract that information? And or does somebody sit there and, you know, do you have a person that extracts all of that and uploads it every week? So I don't know. I don't think your core systems would give that level of insight and user friendliness, but I'm willing to learn. And possibly, potentially, it might be that you need to hire somebody that puts, you know, it might not be a full-time person, but you might need to make a resource available if that's what you want as a council to do, and have a really, you know, uber user-friendly public access portal. But yeah, I'm doing a bit of an investigation. I've been starting that off today because I hadn't seen anywhere that was doing it as well as that. And I do look.
Because one of the, I don't know about the other councillors, but one of the, when I speak to people about planning applications, the biggest, by a country mile, the biggest frustration that people have is, as you already alluded to, is the time scale. Mm-hmm. You know, they put the application in and they're saying, well, I don't know what's going on.
Just goes into the series.
I go to the portal and I can see my application, I can see some people have responded to it, but I don't know what stage we're at.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, Lucy. Do you think it's possible to report back when you've talked to
Cheshire? Oh, yeah, totally. Cheshire West, if they respond to me.
Well, I'm sure
but,
they
I mean,
will.
You know, Dean could get in touch with them, or Sushil, or Leon. You know, one of the officers here could get in touch with that council.
They
might talk to you more than they talk to me, because I'm an evil supplier.
The thing that just goes through my mind is when you sort of, almost like when you buy a package from one of the big operators that puts very small things into big boxes, I won't know. But you can track your order and you know that it's been approached, you know it's going here, you know it's going there. Again, they don't really give you time scales until the very end of the process, but it's that comfort value that an applicant can potentially get just by knowing that it is moving forward.
Yeah.
I think it would be fantastic if we could utilise technology to do that. Obviously, we can reach out to other councils and see what they've done. I think the most important thing here is that we've developed a customer charter and a new communication toolkit for the staff, and they have been given that as an instruction to use it. We are trialling it, we are testing it, we are refining it. But what we have recognised as part of this project is that the communication is inconsistent. There have been applicants who have waited a very long time for an application to be processed and determined. They can go months without hearing anything, and then that's where you get the repeated chases and complaints, and then the escalations usually to myself or even to yourselves as members. So this customer charter sets out what you can expect from the council going forward, and we will make this information available on our website, and we'll use it as a way of communicating to customers. This is how we will work within the planning service going forward. And I say, if we can utilise technology more effectively to help tracking system, for example, above and beyond what we can already provide on our planning portal, then we'll have a look at it. But what we are saying is that customers will be kept informed through the process at key stages, but they won't get a running commentary or a daily update. And I think what we're making clear to customers is, you know, you can't have continuous progress updates. That just is not feasible with the workloads the case officers have got. But when there are key decision points or stages, you will get communicated, whether that's an email, a phone call, or both. And we put some sort of targets in there about response times for emails or phone calls and things like that as well. So we haven't got this document, we haven't had this document. Part of the work that we've done is to put it together. The team have contributed to it. They are now testing and trialing it, and we need to make sure that it works. But I think it's a step forward for us to have this because, as I say, it's not been where we wanted it to be previously, and clearly we need to improve our customer service. And a lot of the frustration that we've had from customers has been around that lack of communication. So I hope that gives you a bit of assurance.
Definitely. I'm sure many people around the room have dealt with Microsoft. It sounds very much like Microsoft. Microsoft just gets on with it. and the councillors, and I'm sure everybody around the table gets members of the community comes up to us and say, I've got this planning application and I don't know what's happening, because they can get hold of us,
mm-hmm.
they can't get hold of you or the planning or the planner, so they come to us and then we've got nowhere to go. And I understand what you're saying, and it sounds wonderful, and it sounds, man, the system's going to move forward at last after, you know. But it doesn't help us as a council. It's out in the middle of nowhere in the wilderness. And we say to people, sorry, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, these people are working on it, and it's going to work. It's going to, you know, we're going to get there. What would you suggest we can do as local council?
So the things that you can do are understand what the planning service can do and what it can't do.
Because it's been years where we've said that, and that some of these people have been waiting years and got nowhere.
Yeah.
So you're fighting against this, so we've got to try and sort that out and move forward.
And just try and keep banging that drum that they are doing everything that they could possibly do, basically. The problem is being fixed. I would not do your job for love nor money. And in the latest Newcastle Borough Council, you know, people were approaching me saying, you're going to stand? Not a chance. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. You're in an incredibly difficult position a lot of the time. I totally respect that you're standing up for the communities. You're there representing their views. You are there, you know, to serve the people. And absolute total respect. And you're in a very difficult position when services are not delivering what they should. You know?
Can I just add a point there then?
Yeah.
If we are required to work within the 8 and 13 mm-hmm. week deadlines, it would be understandable to say you follow the trail, as it were,
mm-hmm.
Up to then. But once it overreaches the 8 or 13 weeks,
mm-hmm.
then how are you going to deal with that? Not you, how's Dean going to deal with it? Because then I think the applicant or the agent, whoever, is perfectly justified in saying, what else is going on?
Mm.
And I mean, you've said that you're aiming to get rid of extensions of time and so on.
Mm.
How is all that going to fit into the admirable plans?
Well, we want to determine more applications within 8 and 13 weeks. Where we can't, we've introduced a new process where we can secure the extensions of time much earlier in the process, where there is a better chance of actually getting that agreement. I think what we've done before is that we've asked for extensions of time quite late on, by which time the applicant, there isn't that kind of goodwill. And I think
he's in the devil in the deep blue sea, isn't he? Because if he says, no, I'm not giving you an extension of time, he's then got the expense of going to appeal. So from the applicant's point of view, it's a complete nightmare.
Mm.
So inevitably, they keep giving you extensions of time. And to me, that's one of the biggest problems to crack. And how you stick to the 8 and 13 weeks, unless it's obviously not an easy case.
There will always be cases where it will go beyond that time,
Sure. Because
of the complexity, the consultation, consultative responses, and so forth. But you know, we want to instil that as an aim to get applications to turn within 8 or 13, all of an agreed extension of time. There will be some applications, historic applications still there, that are beyond that. And obviously, the work that we're doing as a team is to try and get those determined. Obviously, there will be less goodwill from the applicant or agent in that instance. But I think what we've got to get to a position is where those backlogs are reduced,
mm-hmm.
and we're now dealing with them in that sort of timely fashion, and the extensions of time are the more the exception. We're not there yet though, and we'll see a bit in a moment around the figures, but that's certainly where we want to get to. But I think for the time being, we are still going to be reliant on those extensions of time, and good communication with the applicant and agent is going to be really important, so we can agree those extensions.
You go first.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Without going into too much detail, is there somewhere in the system a way where the spam box is interrogated from incoming emails?
I'm pretty sure it will be. The inbox is monitored. I don't know. I assume they would look at the junk folder and the spam folder, because sometimes emails do accidentally land in there. That's quite an operational question that I've
personal
need to
experience.
Oh, have you had
it?
It's gone into the
we
can
check.
Emails that I sent in under my business email address went into spam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Over a 4-week period.
We can check with the team
yeah.
whether they're doing those routine checks. I'm pretty sure they will do.
Have you had a response now?
Jane Aykroyd has tried to unspam me.
Okay. I put one spam.
I'm
borrowing that.
Are you worth on spamming?
Oh, no, probably not.
The one thing I would take away from this, and I want to highlight it, is the fact that you have got an increase in productivity already by 34%. You've still got a lot of work to do, but you've already achieved that. One of the big things that I have immediately latched onto is the fact that you have actively engaged the workforce to be part of it. And so often, can be thought of put in from a management level, that the actual people on the ground floor doing the work know there's a better way, or know it won't work, or know that they can make it work. So from my point of view, I applaud the fact that you have engaged the staff to actually take some ownership on this. And I think if you started from that point of view, in my experience, you've got a chance of actually achieving what you want within the time scale. So thank you for that.
Well done. Anybody else got any comments?
Can I just add something to that, if it's what you want?
Sure.
No.
Years ago when I was a child,
many years.
I was on a suggestion scheme, and one of the things we used to say was, if you want to know how a thing works, ask the person who does it every day.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking in engineering terms, you know, and that's what you're saying, I think.
Person
who does the job, ask them how to do
yeah.
it. Don't go blindly and thinking, I've just come from university, I know everything there is to know about it. Ask the person who does it. And if you've done that, you've got a good chance of
you have.
It's
not a magic bullet, because you have to get consensus between all those people that sometimes do it differently. And if you've ever made a change yourself, you know that even if you know why you've got to do this change, how it's going to work, you've come together to agree the best way forward, the best of the ways that you can think of to go forwards. It's still really hard to remember to do it differently every time. Remember, I have to pick up the phone at the end of, you know, when I've been allocated an application, I have to pick up the phone to the applicant now and write them an email to say, yes, I've got it, and I'm really a human being, and I'm working on it, and thank you for, you know, trusting us with your application, and we're on it. It's even if you've designed it, it's not a magic bullet, but it is the only way, in my experience, to deliver change that's going to stick. So yeah, thank you for that, for recognising that. But it does take a long time.
Can I just ask you one more question, Dean? Why validation is taking so long? Because it ought to be almost a tick box process, I would have thought. And it seems so strange that we can't crack it.
We've got some further information on the chair, but we have got a vacant post within the team, and we have attempted to recruit that post. The next slide will explain what we're trying to do. But in short, yes, we have a validation criteria checklist. It is a process. There are a number of reasons. One is capacity, and the vacant post. Number two is we have had a high level of applications that are submitted, and they are invalid on receipt. And that means then we have to, you know, ask for further information. It takes time for that information to come in. And then obviously more applications are coming in that require validation. So it is a two-way thing here. We need to be quicker, but we also need applicants and agents to send in the right documents and the right plans and all the rest of it to help it to be a smooth process.
Okay.
So I'm sure
let's carry on then, Lucy.
Sorry, there was just one point. There is a validation checklist, but that's not the same as it being a tick box exercise, because the things on the checklist then require detailed review. So for example, making sure that the plans are consistent so that you don't end up with something being approved that there are conflicting plans, someone then builds it wrong, somebody complains and they say, well, that's not the approved plan, they go, well, that one is. So it's that it is a little bit more than a tick box exercise.
Yeah, you've got to go through each of the required documents and plans, and you've got to check it and make sure it is all done in the right format and the right information is submitted so that we can validate it. And we are finding, unfortunately, that too many times applications come in with the wrong information or the wrong scale of plan. And these are applications that have been submitted by professionals, by agents. And as I've said, that's not putting the blame on the applicant's agents, because we've got things that we need to do better, and we've been very clear about that. But we are seeing a high level of applications invalid that we see. And if you add that to all the applications that continually come in, that workflow is then very, very difficult to manage. So we do need to get more capacity in, but you know, we have agents forums. We need to have probably another one over the summer. We need to have that discussion about, well, how can they actually get the information right first time? Because if it's right first time, it's easier to get it through into the hands of a case officer, and then we can get on with the 8 and the 13 weeks. Not, you know, it's been 8 to 10 weeks before it's even got to a case officer.
Yep.
Thank you.
Again, from personal experience, at Hixson Parish Council, we submitted an application 16 weeks ago, something like that. And after 12 weeks or more, came back saying, can't be validated because the north point is missing off what the block plan, and there's no scale bar on the drawing, even though there's a scale written on. And after 14 weeks or whatever it was, they said, and you must supply this information within 14 days, otherwise we'll return all the documents, which seemed a little bit unfair and a little bit nitpicking for a north point on a block plan to be a reason for non-validation.
Chair, I think, again, it goes back to the validation criteria, and it's making sure that the documents and the plans are exactly as per the criteria. It does seem unfair. But then you make an exception for one, and then everybody else wants an exception. And it is quite a hard line that we're taking, and we are saying you've got 14 days.
Was it 14 days or 14 weeks?
It had 14 weeks, but it had 14 days to respond.
As I'm saying, there is a backlog. That those numbers are starting to come down now from 14 weeks. And again, it is a slow process. But again, if agents, applicants can put the right documents in the right plans, we have got a better chance, and then you don't get that frustration at 14 weeks. So it's not nitpicking, it's making sure the application is valid and we can
and
get it through.
For every application where we then write out and say, sorry, but you've missed this, this and this, that then goes back into the queue when it comes in. So the numbers never getting down because you're spending time looking at the same ones.
Exactly.
Over
it's that workflow, isn't it, that we can't manage. If we're switching from new applications back to the one that was wrong, and then and with the capacity issue that we've got at the moment, I'd say we're looking to address that. It's just unfortunately that's how it's working. Not where we want to be. We want to be in a position where we've got a better workflow, applications are coming in with the right information, and it's not 14 weeks, it's maybe a week, 2 weeks, and then you've got a bit of slack in the system there that if somebody does come in with the wrong scale plan, or it's north and it should have been south, we can address it. But at the moment the volumes are just too high, and the capacity isn't there to pick that slack up. And this is the very reason we are in this position, is, you know, why we've got the improvement plan, because we need to break the back of that and get to a better position. So probably there will be cases where people feel, you know, it's unfair, apply common sense. We've had those discussions with lots of agents. We don't want to be like that forever. We want to be more flexible and supportive. But at the moment, we're just having to manage the difficulties around numbers and workflows. Thank you.
Okay.
On the previous slide, was there not a point about the pre-check?
Pre-application.
Yep. But that's not rolled out yet.
No.
If people are coming and asking for pre-app advice, it's being delivered, but we're not publicising that it's available for every application type right now.
We've been doing it more limited
on
the household applications,
yeah.
I think, as
yeah.
Lucy said.
I'm going back to Lucy now, because
yeah, sorry,
we need to carry on with
yeah.
the presentation.
Okay, yeah, we'll be here on that, won't we? I mean, I could talk about this stuff forever. So, yeah, you know, long and short of it is, you've got more resources. You've thrown resources at this problem, which is absolutely what was needed to get you into a better position. Because like Dean says, you've got to break the back of validation. That's got to come down. No matter what else you do post-validation, that's the biggest frustration for people, that they're sat in a system for 14 weeks and they've got no idea what's going on. They've had no acknowledgement that you've even received their application. So it's really difficult for them. I won't read you through all the stats, but work in progress is starting to come down now, again, after going up and down and up and down over the last year or so. Everything is now in line with your new system, your new processes, your new people. So we're on a good track at the moment. Last week, the permanent office of productivity was 0.52 decisions per person per day. You know, that it needs to be 0.6 or above, but I have absolute confidence now in the team and in your new interim deputy DM manager that you will get there. Like next week, the week after that, you know, we're on the rise now. In the last month, your majors were determined 100% in time with agreed extensions, and your non-majors 96% in time with agreed extensions, which is what counts in your national performance statistics. So you're nowhere near going into being designated, and your quality of decision making throughout the last few years has remained excellent. It's not that you're getting overturned appeals, or decisions overturned at appeal. So your quality of decision making has always been really good. Timeliness, not, but that is now where we're aiming at. Keep it at that level. So that's the bit that means that you're much safer than some of your colleagues around the country. A bit about performance management. So this is where we're aiming at. So 350 life planning applications by the end of 2026 or less. We need to get the reduction. We think a realistic look into the future is that the backlog at the moment looks like around 11 weeks worth of work. That doesn't mean everything takes 11 weeks, but 11 weeks worth of work. That should be at 4 weeks or lower by the end of 2026. Productivity, I think by August you should be at 0.6 consistently productivity. And the sign-off is now happening exceptionally quickly, which is great, because if you're a planning officer and you're submitting a recommendation for a decision, the last thing you want it to be doing is waiting to be signed off by a manager. So that is happening absolutely very promptly now. And the officers are being asked that if they agree an extension of time, make sure we've got between three and five days to get it signed off, and then within that extension, and it'll be done on time. But most things are getting signed off the day after they're submitted to a manager, which is great. And your decision making within time or within agreed extension of time, you're consistently exceeding government targets, which you are right now.
Chair, could I just ask a very quick question? These projections or estimates or whatever, is that with present staffing levels, or does that potentially include the two roles that you're advertising or going to be advertising?
They are with the current, so
if those roles, if those positions are filled relatively quickly, that would only benefit.
So they are with the current staffing levels and with the contractors that we've brought in for a short period, and on the assumption that we will be able to fill some of the posts. But I think the most important thing, as Lucy said, we're on track with those anyway. So I think with the staffing that we've got, we can achieve those figures.
Yeah, if you fill permanent roles, you won't have to have as many contractors, basically.
The gaps are in the validation.
Yeah, the validation will be dependent on bringing the additional capacity and filling the role.
I'm not going to talk about this one a lot. It shows you work in and work out, basically. So the amount of work that you've received and the decisions that you've done, you'll see a real low point there in October last year, where just hardly any resources, and it was a huge month for working as well. Not that that's a bad thing. You want people to be putting in planning applications. It shows you're an investable place, so you know you want that to be. You don't want that to be going down at all. But yeah, you can see for yourself there. So basically, you need to see the green line being higher than the blue line for a consistent period of time, so that you get your work in progress down. This is just an example of the weekly performance dashboard that's generated through the weekly operations management meeting. So there's a whole host of data that's looked at by the management team, and then they produce this dashboard which shows what the current number is, what the target is, what the status is, and what the trend direction is. It's been since last week's report. So I think these slides will be available to you afterwards, probably. So I'm not going to go through in detail. You've heard all about what we measure, why we measure it, and what's going well and what needs to be done next. So we're in that implementation phase. The team have designed a lot of new changes. They are now testing them out. They are having effect straight away, which is great. But you will be able to reduce your reliance on your contractors up to 8 FTE. Now, once you launch your new shiny pre-app service, we're really hoping that you get a lot of demand for that. It'll increase your income. It'll smooth the application process because there won't be these conflicts and surprises. Validation requirements will be made abundantly clear if somebody comes and seeks pre-app advice from you beforehand. And quality requirements for the scheme and quality requirements for the application pack itself will also be made much, much more clear to the applicant. So you'd hope if everybody sticks to that pre-app advice that the actual application when it lands will be a much smoother process to get through the system. So I've modelled it out as a big bang here, as in one day you just get rid of 8 people. In reality, it's probably going to be a gradual tailing off, and actually you want to deploy people to the more pre-app work that should be coming in. So it might not be as clear cut as that, because we don't know what demand is out there for pre-apps.
And will it be across the board for major 7 householder?
Probably not. It depends on how many majors. You've been getting a lot of majors in recently, but there's a lot of contributing factors towards that. Not having the 5-year housing land supply means that you're getting a lot of speculative large applications through the door. Yeah. Whether that'll continue or not depends largely on the environment, the external environment factors, which are out of DM's hands. They are somewhat in policy's hands, but not wholly. There's factors that are. We're going to have a new Prime Minister quite soon, aren't we? And what that's going to mean for the planning system, none of us know, probably, unless you do and you can tell me. There's all sorts of factors that might affect that future. But if everything stayed the same, that's what you'd get. If demand stayed the same, and I can't tell you whether they'd be principals, seniors or planning officers or planning assistants.
So they'll mostly be householder applications that would go for pre-app.
That's
your plan, Dean, that they're householders rather than majors?
Yes, for householders, and I think we would look at sort of major application service as well, but we just need to look at what the demand is as it comes in.
Yeah. I mean, open the floodgates for your pre-apps, market them well, make them really attractive, because it is there's not a lot of space in the planning system, any planning authority, to have a lot of to and fro with the case officer and to shape an approvable application. Your planning officer's job is to make a decision on a planning application, or if it goes to committee, your job is if any of you sit on committee, your job is to approve those or refuse those applications. Where was I going with this? No, go on. Next slide. not to shape them, that was the thing. Okay, I'm probably not the best person to speak through the enforcement, but the data's there for you. Sushil, were he here, would be able to talk much more eloquently about what's going on in enforcement.
I think very quick overview is that we've got 3 agency contractors in place who are working through the historic cases. You can see from the numbers there, we have brought those case numbers down quite significantly. We're looking at either taking cases through to formal enforcement proceedings or closing them down, depending on the nature of the investigation that they do. New cases continue to be raised, but we are chipping away at those older cases. So we have the new planning enforcement policy. We want to start doing the kind of triaging of cases that we talked about in the last time, but we've got some good contractors in place at the moment, and just really need to keep working on getting those case numbers down and being proactive and trying to provide that better service.
Okay. Yeah. Are they on site or are they located in Kent and Essex and places such like that?
They are working from home, but they will do site visits as necessary. Yeah. But they're not sort of stationed in the office 5 days a week.
You don't want them to be there. You want them out.
They're doing all the site visits that they need to do, etc.
Carry on then.
Yep, so this is our commitment to you, really. Getting to good. We know we're not there quite yet. but an unrelenting focus on delivering the actions, and your new interim enforcement manager, who started yesterday in his role officially, is absolutely championing it a bit, and he's doing it. He's good. He's come from within the team, so it's not anybody coming in. Leon Campbell.
Oh, right.
So yeah, he's getting going with the actions. It is going to be a goodbye from me, and I won't be at future scrutiny panel meetings, because we've delivered what we were engaged to do, which is all your new systems, processes, and engagement, things like that. So yeah, this will be the last time I come, unless you want to invite me. As an interested person, I'll be happy to come along and see how you're doing.
Happy to see you sitting in the back.
Yeah. Post-Mondrian world, but yeah, I'm very excited and encouraged to see what you do with the foundation that we've now got.
Well, I think it's fair to say that we appreciate all the work that you've done from the scrutiny committee's point of view. I think it's put us on the right track as a planning team. I sincerely hope we don't have you back.
Oh. I can help you delivering an excellent planning service next.
Much as we appreciate what you've done, because I think we would feel that we were a bit of a failure if we had.
Right, sustained change that's owned by the team was always our aim right from the beginning. We said that, so
you did.
Yeah, you're absolutely.
No,
right,
thank
there.
You, Lucy. It's and thank you to Mum. Are you leaving them?
No, goodness no. I'm a company's out director. I can't go anywhere.
You're much needed.
Yeah.
So thanks to Mondrian as well.
No problem.
Do you want to stay on, or do you want to take your leave?
I think, well, there's one more slide.
Oh, is there one more slide?
Yeah, so that's... I won't read it all through. You're all proficient readers, probably. You have a lot to read. These are the next steps. We've talked about them already, so they're just there for your ease to wrap things up, really. And yeah, that's me done.
And it should be helpful to have that circulated. You did that, Jackie, will you?
I will check about that. Was it into the generic inbox?
Yes, planning app.
Okay.
So thank you very much for your contribution.
No problem. And good luck.
Good luck to the team. And we now move on to the annual business report. Is that your thing, Lucy?
No, that's
yours.
It's
not yours. Okay. This is your leading, isn't it?
I can take committee for it, yeah.
Thank you.
So this is the annual scrutiny business report.
I think we'll take it page by page.
Do you want to take it page by page?
Because there are a few things we want to pick out.
Okay, so I think the first page, obviously, is make it clear the purpose of the report. It reports the business that was conducted by scrutiny committee over the last municipal year, and obviously the recommendation would be to note and recommend this for submission to council.
I'd like to start on page 7 if everybody's okay with that.
For this committee is
starts at 6, yeah.
5.13 through to 5.22. So effectively the section of the report summarises the various topics that were scrutinised by this committee last year. I want to go through those. The first area, 5.14, was the local visitor economy partnership. We had a presentation from officers from the LVEP to talk about priorities for Stafford Borough. And I think it was agreed, Chair, that the outcome of the work that they were doing to look at those opportunities would be brought back for a future discussion. So perhaps we need to have a look at that in the work programme.
Yep.
You also received an update on the attendance at the UK REEF event. And I think we'll probably touch on that a little bit later with the development framework update. 5.15, so you consider the annual infrastructure funding statement, which relates to the Section 106 funding. And 5.22, obviously, you had a joint meeting with the Resources Committee to look at Section 106 funding in more detail, and all members were invited to attend. So I think Again, there will be further information to bring back in the future as to the position with Section 106 monies, and particularly spending the money in local communities. 5.16, obviously, National Planning Policy Framework and the local plan. We see various updates on that through the year, and you have an update this evening. 5.17, we looked at the protecting our rivers and oceans motion and the actions associated with that. There was an additional meeting organised in August, was it last year? We had presentations from external parties such as Severn Trent Water, and again they committed to come back with further information at a future meeting.
Well, they didn't actually, they said they'd come back at that meeting.
We haven't had anything back from them.
I think we'd like to follow that up, I think, yeah. Because they simply haven't acted on that.
So we need to write to them. The committee also asked Cabinet to review the original motion and present an update.
And a letter.
Did go to Cabinet back in the last year.
Can we have a feedback from Cabinet then? That would be useful. And members agreed a letter should be sent to the local MP.
Yeah, that hasn't been done yet, but it will be.
Just going back to 5.15, we asked for the item to be brought back to scrutiny as to how ward members and communities can be more effectively engaged. And we have had a bit of a debate on that with the Resources Committee. Mm. I think it would be possibly a useful item to put on a future agenda. Because it can be frustrating for members not to be involved, and there must be ways that we can actually make the ward members and communities feel that they're much more effectively engaged.
Okay, we can bring that back to a future
not
meeting. You may
Sorry,
want to do a task and finish if you wish, but we can put it on the work programme and do an update.
Can you put it down as a possible task and finish then?
Yeah. I think if we put it on the work programme to do a further update and then potentially look at that, if that's okay. 5.18, obviously received a further update from Mondrum, so through the course of the year you've had various presentations on development management and enforcement as well. If you looked at the enforcement policy, which has now been agreed at Cabinet, you may want to come back to that later this year, see how effective it is. And I think you did ask for a further biodiversity net gain workshop or a refresher, so again, we probably need to come back to that.
Could we set that up? But do members agree, 5.18, we asked for a BNG update, because I think members can find it quite difficult to remember what it's all about.
Yeah.
So a reasonably short evening workshop would be helpful.
We can speak to the officers about that.
Yeah.
5.19, we had a presentation on kind of renewable energy, specifically linked to planning policy and some planning applications and appeals that we've seen recently. 5.20, we had the presentation on heritage and conservation. Obviously, you requested that Cabinet look at resources to enable the introduction of a local heritage assets list. So,
has that happened?
Hasn't gone back to Cabinet yet.
Can we have that go back?
It will be something that we look at.
Can we bring it to Cabinet?
We haven't brought it to Cabinet yet,
I
suppose.
I want to see it.
Yeah. So, officers are working on a paper at the moment.
I think that was one that the heritage officer, conservation officer, she is. Was keen on, and you were keen on, but the resources side was problematic, so I think it'd be a great one for Cabinet to have a look at.
So officers are preparing a paper that obviously needs to go to Cabinet to review.
We also need the funding element to it, which involves another team, just to make sure that when it comes to Cabinet, it can be a that do it.
Well, as I said, there are various considerations that we need to put forward to Cabinet. We haven't done that work yet, but we've...
Please do.
And also Sam offered to host a workshop. I think that would be very well appreciated if and when she can find the time.
Well, speak to Alex perhaps after the meeting, and we'll see if we can get something in.
Okay.
Is he noticed? You're taking note of him.
Yeah.
Excellent. And she was quite keen to do it as well, just for your information. Anybody got any comments on that?
I think I just find the two others. No, you'd set up a task and finish group on.
Yes, we're coming back to that.
That'll come back again later this year. So
actually, should we just deal with that, Doug, at the moment? The task and finish group is sort of winding up now, and we thought we'd bring it back to the October meeting.
Yep.
I'll hand over to you, because you can say
there's been a number of different kind of avenues to explore in order to identify kind of actionable outcomes, which we discussed at the previous meeting. I'm trying to progress those. Brendan has been speaking to East staffs, and I have been speaking to a number of different people and pulling together that information. It is not yet complete, but I'm hoping it will be
by October. We should be okay. And I'm due to speak to Michelle, who'd gone off to Japan when I had to go. She heard I was coming, absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks for that, Dean. We just note that, don't we?
It's to recommend submission to council.
Yeah, happy to
it's got to be submitted to council. We're happy to accept that it's submitted to council. Very much. And the next item is the local plan. Starring role. Do you want to go here? Here. There we go.
Thank you.
You've got a presentation.
Yes, good evening everyone, good to see you. So I'm going to do a relatively short presentation on the new local plan that will include the main elements of the report that's in front of you, and then we can take questions afterwards. So the new local plan, we've been preparing evidence and effectively making sure that we're in a position to go out with our first initial stage of consultation over the course of the last year. In March, the government published the regulations that enabled us to then move forward and actually formally begin that new local plan process. And so at the beginning of June, we went out with the scoping and participation consultation. So what I'm going to run through is very briefly the current local plan and the neighbourhood plans, the purpose of the new plan, the contents of the consultation, and the immediate next steps for the team will be to go through the self-assessment stage, which is Gateway 1 in October, and there's a fair amount of work that the team need to do in order to then be able to go out with the next stage of consultation on the proposed plan, content and evidence base, which will be in June and July next year. So we've got an adopted plan, part one, part two, prepared in the context of the statutory policies and the national planning policy framework, and we have a number of neighbourhood plans that have been made or adopted, and several that are still being progressed. And the development plan it needs to be used alongside the national planning policy framework in terms of making planning decisions. So the purpose of the new plan is to align with the new government's approach in terms of plan making, to deliver the national planning policy framework, which has changed fairly significantly over the last couple of iterations, and we're currently awaiting the results of the NPPF consultation that we're hoping will come out relatively soon. The plan will continue to determine planning applications across the borough, striving for economic growth to support our communities, but also addressing the very significant increase in housing provision that came in December 2024, and clearly that led to us losing our 5-year supply. So the sooner we get a local plan in place, the sooner we can rectify that situation and provide certainty to residents and businesses. You've got this timetable in your packs. So as I said, we had to wait until the end of March before the regulations came into effect. On the 21st of May, we took a report to Cabinet in order to then move into the consultation period. The first thing that we were required to do by the government standards was to publish a timetable and a notice of intent to actually commence the new local plan, and a notice that we were going to do a scoping consultation. So we did all of that on the 3rd of June. We in fact put it on the website the day before, which is reported in your papers. But the official date was the 3rd of June, and then the consultation started on the 8th. We're currently live in a consultation period through to the 28th of July, and looking forward to a number of responses, particularly using our online consultation process, which makes it easier to deal with the responses that we receive digitally and be able to turn them around as swiftly as we can, and the committee will see the responses that we receive. Individual members are always welcome to put in their own responses to the consultation as well, so do please bear that in mind. But this is a full timetable. The 30 months that you may have heard about is actually triggered on the 30th of October, so that's when we officially enter our 30-month period, and that then takes us from Gateway 1 through to the adoption date on the 30th of April 2029, and the various statutory requirements and consultations you can see on the screen that we need to pass through. So back to this consultation. We're currently out with 3 documents: scoping issues and early participation, a communications and engagement strategy, which is an updated statement of community involvement, but looking at the planning policy engagement side, and then the strategic environmental assessment and sustainability scoping report. And as I've mentioned, the deadline for comments is the 28th of July with online consultation. So just spending a little bit more time on the actual scoping issues and participation elements. So here are some of the key questions that we're asking for feedback on, and then 8 themes. And those 8 themes will then be moved forward in to provide the structure for the new local plan itself. The questions at the top will help to provide some context in terms of what the people feel the vision should be for the plan, what they want the plan to achieve, and what changes should occur. Planning is all about change, and it's all about having a secure vision to be able to then demonstrate that change has been is measurable and can be demonstrated, and that's come across quite clearly in the latest NPPF consultation. That's the direction of travel. The communication and engagement strategy has two main elements to it: the digital engagement, but also the traditional methods. It's important to engage as many people in the community as we can. We continue to look to you as our ambassadors to get that message out and get people engaged. We've got an online presence and various leaflets, etc., that we're trying to engage people. And you may well remember that we produced videos in the past, so that will be part of this consultation moving forward as well. So this is a consultation document at the moment. We're asking people for feedback and comments on what we can do, and then we'll consider that within the resources that we have available, and that includes hard to reach groups as well, and so we will happily knock on doors, but if you're able to provide introductions to those hard to reach groups and be able to engage with them as well, then we'd be more than happy to work alongside you on that side of things. And then the third document is this strategic environmental assessment. We have to do this. It's a statutory requirement. Scoping report is the first stage of this process, and this goes and parallels right through the whole local plan process through to adoption, with various reports that need to be prepared on strategic environmental assessment through the five key stages. And we've identified 13 objectives for the plan, various issues and opportunities. And underpinning that is quite a detailed technical appendix, which is also available. And coming to the, sort of the final slides, I've mentioned before about the evidence base, and that continues to be prepared. There are a number of these documents that are reaching the final stages, and so we'll be looking to publish these in the next couple of months or so, so that people have got opportunity to actually see this material. And then as we move forward and develop the vision and the contents, then they can reflect on the evidence that that has been prepared. So yes, the team will continue to commission consultants to get these various reports done in order to inform the process. And we continue to have our call for sites open for developers and landowners to bring forward land that could potentially be considered through the new local plan process. So that brings to the end. That's the web page where you can access all of the relevant information, and press releases have already been sent out in the first week in June to try and raise as much awareness of this as we can. Thank you.
I think Doug's got the first question.
The sort of elephant in the room, I think, is the fact that that timescale goes beyond when this council is proposed to no longer exist.
No. Well, we've got a new Prime Minister coming in, so it might change.
How does the plan process integrate with local government organisation?
We are just cracking on with the job. We are waiting for announcements. We're waiting for government to come up with further clarity. And until such time as we know anything different, we are just going to get on with this job and get this document done. And it's absolutely crucial that we get it done, because we need to provide that certainty to the communities. We haven't got a 5-year supply, and the sooner we can get a plan in place, the sooner we can be in a stronger position. So in terms of local government reorganisation, we'll see what comes, but in the meantime, we need to get this job done.
What's the historic context? How has this worked with previous reorganisations? Because we've seen districts and boroughs be absorbed into large counties in Somerset and North Yorkshire. This has happened before. This isn't new. How did it work with those? That's not the kind of information that's publicised particularly well. I have tried to find out how they have integrated that. I can't find that information out. But this isn't a new thing. How did it work in those other places?
So there's been different approaches in different councils that have been brought together, and that sort of transformational process has taken different models and at different times and at different speeds. If you look at North Yorkshire, Somerset, Cumbria, they've all taken slightly different approaches. Some of them have stuck with maintaining their sort of district offices. Others have taken a different approach. Like Wiltshire, for example, has just gone ahead with a one council approach. So there are different models, and that's something that any new authority would need to address when it comes into place, which the government's currently saying is April 2029. But again, we'll just have to see how that timetable moves forward.
And
we've done more than that, though, haven't we, Alex? Because we do know the timetables for two of our neighbouring authorities, and we've tried to align at least the start of our timetable with those. We know under local government organisations we're likely to be with those two. So there is no guarantee everyone stays on the same exact precise schedule, but we've tried to align as much as we can be two that will end up in the same place as us, whatever happens.
How does it work with the strategic land allocation, the 5-year supply? Once the new authority exists, do they do a new calculation, or do they do individual calculations on the historic areas, or how does that work moving forward? Are we going to end up with a new authority that will have one number, and then they'll just try and allocate that depending on where they can fit it in with the existing plans?
So we can only work with what we know, which is that the National Planning Policy Framework has set out a methodology of how the local housing need will be calculated for each local planning authority area, and so we know our number, and the other 300 odd districts and boroughs across the country know their numbers as well. At the moment, the regulations are not in place to actually have the strategic authorities established yet. So again, that's something that we're waiting for. And then in terms of how they will engage, that will be up to those strategic authorities to decide. But they won't be able to get away from the fact that there is a number that's been calculated for their areas that they will need to address, either through a spatial development strategy or through a future unitary local plan, if that's where we land up.
Brendan.
Thank you, Chair. Through you to the cabinet member, local government review. Did I hear a date of about July the 16th where an announcement might be made, which might give some indication where we're travelling towards?
Local government renovation.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? It's out of my control.
But have I got that right, that July the 16th date?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm happy to come in if that's okay, John.
Yes, please.
I think the expectation was that there would be an announcement made before the summer recess, which is around that date. We see what happens. Mm. There's been nothing confirmed by civil servants to say that won't happen, but obviously, as alluded to earlier, there are other events transpiring at the moment, so we just have to see what happens. But we'll react depending on whatever decisions are made and whenever those decisions are made, I think is the most important thing.
But back to the point that was made, we can only work with what we've got, and we should not stop. We need to keep moving, because this is how we get control over our landscape, over our built environments, and over our future. We shouldn't stop, whatever the other stuff.
Absolutely. As we are suffering this problem of 5-year supply and the agents and developers coming thick and fast, at what stage does this document or the work we're doing carry weight to stop the flood?
So it won't get to a position of actually carrying weight until the
29.
after gateway 3, is it? When
I
the
don't understand
the
gateways. This,
yes,
this is new jargon. That's quite beyond me.
Slides to the timetable.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good plan. Because as ward members, certainly our ward, we've been bombarded.
Yeah. So it would not be until after the close of the consultation of the proposed local plan that the document would actually carry weight. So we're looking at June and July 2028. But again, it's the same as the current system, which is that it will carry some weight. However, in the context of the evidence base that's been prepared and any representations that have been made on a particular policy in the plan. So, for example, if a policy has not attracted a lot of objections and representations, and the council has agreed that that's a policy it wants to be adopted, then that will have more weight than a policy that has got lots of objections and will clearly need to be considered
very carefully through the examination process, and so to make sure that examination process is fair and open and transparent, therefore less weight can be afforded to a policy that clearly would need to be addressed and responded to through the examination process. So the plan will have a certain weight, but then the individual elements of that plan will have different weightings as well within it. So it's a bit of a complicated picture, but that's something that would need to be reviewed as we get to that stage.
More than that, if you flip the slide with the evidence that we will have gathered by then is evidence, and that will be able to be used in any individual cases to either validate or argue against
the
application. The evidence itself is driving the plan, but the evidence can be used as soon as it becomes fact, becomes known, it's evidence.
Yes, yeah, so the evidence provides the context for the policies, but you as the council have the final word in terms of what the policy says and how the evidence is used. And so that's the critical bit. The evidence is used to support preparing the policies and crucially the vision for the plan and the development strategy again will be led by the evidence, but it will be for the council to decide exactly what that strategy will be and how that evidence will be deployed through the development strategy.
But so what Ant is saying is that it can be used individually for individual planning applications as evidence, which would be a good thing.
Yeah, planning applications, the planning applications, they will be considered in line with the adopted plan. That's the first thing that a case officer will look at. Then other material considerations, which include the MPPF, which is pretty significant, other material consideration, but then any up-to-date relevant evidence that has been published will also be something that can be raised and considered by the applicants as part of the planning application process. But there are various, there's a whole range of elements that a case officer will look at, not least comments from statutory agencies and their recommendations on a particular planning application as well. So there's a whole wealth of information that case officers will need to consider.
We're well aware of it. Thank you, Brendan. The planning chairman will tell you even more.
If at some point in the next 12, 18 months a number of planning applications for developments have been approved that take us beyond the 5-year supply figure, would that mean that the 5-year supply lack of 5-year supply as a planning argument by agents and applicants would be nullified? In other words, if you have a 5-year supply in place in 12, 18 months' time, would that be something that this council could use to resist undesirable development?
So if we're in a situation that we regain our 5-year supply because such a significant number of planning applications have been approved and the amount of housing, land and development has been put on the table, then what would happen is the adopted plan settlement boundaries would then come back into play. So that principle of development beyond the settlement boundaries on land beyond them is not acceptable in principle because we've got sufficient amount of 5-year supply. So, however, that isn't a reason for not pushing ahead as quickly as we can with a local plan, because basically one of the key elements for the local plan would have to demonstrate to the inspector that from day one we will be meeting a 5-year supply of housing land, and that would have to be demonstrated through the 20-year period. So the local plan would have to identify significant areas of land for new development to meet the housing requirements and therefore to be adopted. And so that's why it's really important for us to work together on the vision of what we want the borough to look like in 20 years' time within the context of that scale of development, how it's going to happen, and then where it's going to happen. But that's for another day. Let's see what the
consultation... We'll have you back again.
Yes, please. Let's see what the consultation brings, because it's really important that we hear from the local communities and then consider that carefully through the autumn and the emerging evidence before we then move forward with the next stage of the plan.
Thank you, Alex. Any,
I'd like to do some parting words, if that's allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, in your wards, you have residents, associations, community groups, parish councils. Make sure they are thinking about their vision of where we live and where we work for 2045. We want to hear them. We want them to contribute to this. What is the evidence they need to meet their vision? All of these groups should be helping us to get this right. And it's not just housing. Where do they work? What kind of jobs do they do? Where would be the right place for employment? Go talk to them. Go encourage them to contribute to Alex's so that we get it right.
Thank you, Alex, for that.
Key part of that, which I know we're going to come up to in a minute, with
Tanzetta. I think on that note, we can move on to the next item on the agenda. Thank you very much for your time, Alex.
Okay.
And we're now on to the Stafford Town Centre development. It's Michelle's starring moment.
So I think we've been kind of warming you up to this coming through for a while now. So once we knew this piece of work was on the books, I think we wanted to make known what it was that was going on with the centre programme whilst, aside from demolition, can't really see a great deal of what's going on. In fact, this is what's been going on. So the report basically gives you a high-level plotted history and an update on where we're at with the Town Centre programme as it stands, which in a nutshell is that we've completed all of our strategic land assembly work. We have completed in the main demolition works at former Guildhall site and former Co-op site, and we are imminently, subject to planning permission, starting demolition on the former Wilco site, 10 to 12 Jailgate Street, and there's some residual works off Crabbery Street that are sort of within the Guildhall site. So where there was, it was a brow bar and another little shop unit, we're basically behind the arch off Crabbery Street, and so there's a chunk of canopy that we couldn't take down because the tenants weren't able to relocate whilst we'd got the contractors on site. So we parked it knowing that we'd be needing to do some further demolition elsewhere, so it's a little bit of work on there. So that's where we stand in terms of physical works, but the piece of work that we needed to complete before we can go out to do our developer selection process is have a document that sets out with a mixture of kind of high level data but also some images that kind of says this is the look and feel, this is the scale of development that we want to see coming into the town centre. So on page 23 of your agenda, there's a table that basically sets out the six development areas. These are the areas that are within Stafford Council ownership. So this isn't saying this is it for the town centre, but this is our bit at the moment. These are the priority sites. So there shouldn't be any surprises in there, with possibly the exception, and this did go to Cabinet in April, so I think everyone's kind of up to speed on the various site proposed allocations. Mm-hmm. But I think the only one that is relatively new to the table is earmarking the former Wilco site for the college, which is, in terms of the long-term sustainable growth options for the town centre, that's a really positive one to kind of have in our basket. So broadly speaking, we're looking at, and if anyone can think of a better term for this, it's not just a market hall, it's an indoor market hall kind of plus. Sometimes you'll hear it referred to as a 21st century market hall. That doesn't mean there'll be space in them, but it's not a replacement of a traditional market hall.
It's looking at how we can get food and beverage uses in there. It's how we can have something other than strictly short-term retail uses as a way of driving footfall within the town centre. So that market hall is earmarked to the rear of the guild hall. So if you think about the six or so little units that are left just inside the entrance, I kind of refer to as the arcade, it's effectively the area right behind there. The idea being that coming off the market square, you go through that arcade and then you're opened out into this development site. Then we have three residential and mixed use parcels of land, which is effectively the area that used to be multi-storey car park on Guildhall site, the area that was the old indoor market hall, and then moving down Earl Street, basically where the management suite, gym and little surface car park were to the rear of the Guildhall, and then the former co-op site, which will include, subject to planning, the cleared site for 10 to 12 Jailgate Street as well. So those are the residential, and when we say mixed use, basically what we're looking at is this isn't a case of taking out lots of commercial use from the town, filling it with housing. It's about how do we have commercial uses that might be independent retail, that might be other commercial uses, they could be services rather than straight retail, but with residential above. Again, just to kind of create that critical mass of people in the town centre. And then as I mentioned, we've got the site at Broad Street earmarked for education, which hopefully will be the college. And then finally, we are recognising that in amongst all of this, there's a reasonable amount of public realm, so public space that needs to be thought about quite carefully. What we don't want is a mishmash of different stuff because we've got different parcels of land. So when we are moving to that developer selection process, one of the questions we'll be posing is how are we going to do that and make sure it doesn't look like a patchwork quilt. So those are the six development areas. I think everything else is kind of within the document, which is where the more exciting bits are. So I don't know if you want me to just
Yes, please. I think people would appreciate that.
So with the document, basically, this document is designed to support us being able to attract the right kind of developers, the right kind of investors, but being realistic about the scale of the opportunity. This is not a document that is showing you what these sites will look like. This is nowhere near a planning application at this point, but you need something, because do we want a 36-storey building in South Town Centre? Absolutely not. So this is basically saying,
if you go into the marsh, it wouldn't work.
Well, no, it just keeps sliding. And these are our parameters. These are our parameters, and that then makes it easier for development companies to look at it and say, well, do the things that we look to deliver, do they fit within this town centre? It's also trying to set a bit of context, so we know Stafford inside out, but we might not be engaging with people that don't know it so well. So it's basically letting them know what Stafford Town Centre and Stafford as a borough has to offer. So it's quite a lengthy document, but I suppose my final comment would be, don't worry about the various colours and designs. None of that is set in stone. It's just to make sure that we're kind of aiming in the right direction.
Thank you. Frank.
The question I keep getting asked, and I have just you want to get your hands in time, is we're taking out the public toilets. Are we going to put one back in?
Yeah, so the plan is, subject to planning, I hope the planners are enjoying in referencing that. So if you get planning permission next week to pull down the Wilkinson site, we've already spoken with our contractors. First of all, it is technically possible to pull down the empty former shop mobility unit without harming the toilets. There's also no immediate need for us to demolish the toilets. So why would we? Yeah. They can still be used, they're still safe to access. So if you bear in mind that we've got the Wilkinson site, we've got 10 to 12 Jailgate, that works at the Guildhall, the toilets will come absolutely last. What we don't know yet is when we get to the point that we need to pull them down, how long it will then be before we can reprovide as part of any of the developments that are in here. Part of that is that we don't know what the college's timescale is. So when the college do redevelopment, they are generally fixed to quite a firm timescale because they will have their own funding conditions. So I think we can't specify exact times. What we can commit to is we won't pull them down until we absolutely have to.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
D.
I love the new development, but I am really concerned about where everybody we're going to bring in are, given the fact that over this winter, and it's getting worse every winter, there was no parking on Sainsbury's at all on several occasions. A lot of Sainsbury's had gone, the back end had gone, all winter, most of the winter. Same with the other...
Aldi,
mm-hmm. Thank you. Over there. Where's everybody going to park?
So, within these plans, again, they are only indicative, but you will see there is some element of parking within some of the sites. However, we know that by the time we get to needing to submit planning applications on this, there needs to be an answer about how we're going to deal with parking. But until we know what the actual the detail of the developments is going to be. So are we talking residential on this site or commercial? If it's residential, what kind of size units? Because all that then gives us an idea about the number of cars that potentially we're dealing with. That is part of the questions that we will pose when we go out to find our developer partner, is because we've been quite upfront about it, we know parking is a really sensitive issue, quite rightly. So how are you going to tackle that? So it's another one where we don't have the answer just yet, but we are very aware of it.
I've had 20. Worries from the Trinity Church on this.
Yep.
They are very concerned about parking, because not just does it affect their congregation,
yep,
it affects the rooms they've got,
yep,
within the church.
Yep.
And people that use these rooms have got a lot of disabled and other issues along them lines, and they're worried that they're going to not be able to have the functionability of these rooms due to being driven away on parking.
Yep, so myself and Maxine from my team are in conversation regularly with representatives from the church, so we've been to visit them twice. We've sat down and walked them through the development framework. I think it's fair to say that the church has two considerations. One is, what are we going to do should Wilkinson's be demolished? How are you going to manage the parking there?
That's right.
And we've got an active conversation with them on that, and as it stands at the minute, that shouldn't pose them any huge issues. The other is, what are they going to do at the point at which the site then becomes a college site? We can't give them any answers to that yet because we don't know what that scheme's going to look like, but what we have done is made a commitment to them that we will join up a conversation between ourselves, the college and the church, so that they're involved in that. I would say that the people that we have met have been incredibly supportive of the council in this and want to work with us. It's not just the church that use that building. There's an awful lot. They gave me a list. There's a huge amount of community groups using it. I think for them, their main concern at the moment is making sure that they understand what's happening and when, so that they can then deal with what they need to deal with. But we're keeping that dialogue open, so hopefully it won't be a problem.
Good.
Doug?
With my looking at even the economy hat on, placing residential, mixed use residential onto the high street potentially has an impact on the ability of existing evening economy kind of providers.
Yeah.
Is there a anything at this stage we can be doing to identify that, that needs to be taken into consideration.
So I think if you have an existing residential development and then someone comes in with a commercial use and they then want to do something either noisy or creating a lot of footfall, then the people that were already there, you can see that they've probably got a case for being a bit grumpy. In this case, we're looking at bringing residential into a commercial area, so it's the other way around. And actually, the considerations are, how do we design, well, not we, how do the developers design a scheme that means that the two uses aren't clashing with each other? So it can be around the design, it can be around the placement of windows, the materials used, but also it should be a strong relationship, because the businesses want the people there, and the people want to be there because there's things to do in the evening. So again, that's the kind of thing that developers that specialise in town centre regeneration are fully aware of, because it's basically the same wherever you go. So that will form part of our selection process. Again, it's something that, you know, we've got to address.
From that point of view, we know from, I'm aware from bitter experience, that that's not necessarily the case with people moving in, and Fabric in London is a really good example of that. If you're not aware, it's a nightclub. As far as I'm concerned, it's a historic cultural place that has closed down because of residential development nearby, noise complaints, which meant it closed. So we know that's the theory, but the practice when we see that is not necessarily the case.
I suppose my counter to that would be that the Guildhall site, as an example, where are those activities currently? Because it's such a large site that's been cleared because there were vacant commercial uses. I think, I'm not going to do this, but for example, if you built residential in the middle of Market Square, then absolutely, you've potentially got a problem there. I'd also say there's kind of, we're talking evening economy as opposed to night time. So we're not looking, as part of this development framework, at a kind of nightclub type culture. That's not the kind of ethos of this document. But I do absolutely take the point, and it is something that will have to be considered, because there's no point building something if you're just then going to end up with a load of complaints and no one wants to live there, no one wants to work there. It completely defeats the object.
I'm specifically thinking Hogarth and the Butler's Bell on that stretch, which are quite near to DA4, which is residential / mixed use northeast. That's my...
Well, there's already residential in Stafford Street, so the one that runs between the former co-op and the block that Hogarth's is on.
Mm-hmm.
On the right-hand side, above some of the retail units, there's already been residential conversions along there, and I'd have to look into it, but I'm not aware of that having been a particular issue, and they're that bit closer. But I can certainly look into it.
You'll be picking it up in the report, for sure. I think you had a question, Dee.
I do, thank you, Chair. One of the you go somewhere like, I'll just come back from the south of France, but you go to Italy, you go to Spain, and they very much have that mixed economy, don't they? Shops at the bottom, and then there's a doorway, and you go up, and it's a flat, and people have lived there for donkey's years because they're usually older towns. But one of the things that really works is the fact that when they do open their shutters, they've got access to the outside world, and likewise, the outside world's got access to them, because it works really well. And one my thing is, are they, if we have the residential, are they going to have flats? Are they going to have balconies, Juliet balcony, however, to allow that, so it isn't never the train should meet, because,
yeah.
I mean, I knew there was lots of residential where you're talking about, and down where the Vine and round,
yes,
there, there's the,
yeah,
that sort of corner, that alleyway there onto the high street,
yeah,
it's all residential. If you didn't know it was there, you didn't know it was there, did you? But
yeah.
And that's the point, that's shut away.
Yeah.
Whereas if we want it to be a community, it's got to be open.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that when we go out to the market to try and secure those partners, there's a whole section in the kind of information that we'll put out, which is basically what's our rationale for doing all of this, and the fundamentals of the funding scheme that started all of this off are that you want a vibrant town centre. But vibrant doesn't just mean business, it means business, it means residential, it means visitors. So it's really important that we keep those initial aims in mind when these schemes are designed, which you're absolutely right.
Thank you. I've got one question for you, Michelle, probably for Dean as well. How is this going to fit into the overall town master plan? And part of this is that I know that you've sort of created a defining line for the area that you're looking at, but I am horrified under page 40, Heritage Landscape and Public Realm, that St Chad's has been completely ignored, which is probably our most important building in the whole borough. So I hope that all future reference will be made to St Chad's, even if it is on the periphery of the main site.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. So the development framework will sit very nicely alongside the master plan, which in the final paragraph, I think, of your covering report, we reference the fact that master plan is on its way through the committee process. So basically, the town centre master plan looks at these sites, which are borough council owned, but it also looks at a much wider area across the town centre, which incorporates some of the county council-led projects, but also it's over a much longer period, so it's identifying, after we've done these interventions, which were always intended to kickstart the regeneration in the area, we were never saying that we were going to basically do it all. It was, there are opportunity sites that aren't currently on the books, so the master plan kind of sets the long-term scene for the entire town centre. We've made sure that there's nothing in this document that conflicts with that document. And then for Alex's purposes, we've worked really hard to make sure that what we're producing as part of the master plan is also consistent with what potentially Alex will need as part of his evidence base. So when we come back to talk to you about the master plan, we might borrow Alex that night to give a bit of a local plan view. So that's that. In terms of St Chad's, no, it isn't on here, but basically because it's just a little bit too far away. But I promise you, it has not been ignored.
Most important. Is there a timetable for the master plan? Because it was last November.
Yeah, I think.
And we'd like, I think it'd be very relevant to the scrutiny committee.
Yeah, I think in the report we've said in the summer, the report is being finalised as we speak, really. So
we'll put it on our.
It will be coming back to the committee, and then you'll be able to see how that sits above the development framework and any other proposals that are coming through from others as well.
Brendan.
Thank you, Chair. I quite like the ideas here. Very good. I like the idea that the street scene is widened by this, I'm looking at page 30, by these sort of cantilevered premises, first floor is cantilevered over some pillars there, which opens it up better than just being closed in. And I know it's only illustrative, but if that's something that could be taken forward. Just one thing on page 30, I couldn't get my head around where the tower is and that other building there. I don't think they look like that in reality, do they?
Yes, so I also struggled with that when this came through. So I sat with Ed Hanley and he assured me, don't worry about it. It's just that you can't get the depth perception between the tower and the side of the former Red Run building, but he understands
it. It did my head in, though, because they're looking at that.
Yeah, mine too.
And I think, it is to do with the depth. But just going back to the point about the views, one of the first things that the planners were really pleased to see when we showed them the draft plans is that you will be able to stand at Chell Road and see all the way around to St Mary's. So that view was uncovered when the demolition started happening.
Yeah.
Why on earth would we want to lose that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. What are we doing with this report? We're noting
it.
We note it, but thank you very much for the work, Michelle. We'll definitely be bringing it back. It's obviously really interesting.
Just obviously noting it, but I think it would be worth just capturing in the minutes some of the points, particularly around the link to the nighttime economy task and finish groups. I think there's probably a need to link the planners in with that discussion. I'm not going to put Alex on the spot now, but obviously there have been some reforms, planning reforms around that, and making sure the onus is on developers to soundproof buildings and how it interacts with. I'm not an expert in this area, but I think it is certainly something to look at. Because what we don't want is you can move forward with recommendations on night time, and then actually we're proposing those residential that don't work. So I thought that was a really good point.
And it ties in very well with the October meeting and Doug's report.
Yes.
So yes, thanks for adding that.
Could I just ask, is this on the borough website? So it can be.
Yes, so it's on the website. I think it's still got its own page. We're also in the process of organising some briefings quickly to basically just run through it, just with the slight caveat that it's still a concept stage. But yeah, that's coming in the future.
Are the Town Centre Partnership involved with this?
Town Centre Partnership, no.
There's no replacement. I thought there was a replacement. It's all gone.
I think there's probably the beginnings of something that might operate in a similar sort of way, but nothing formal.
Oh, well, that saves a lot of bother then, doesn't it?
Chairman, page 70 gives a better view with the tower and the old pub in.
Right, I'm moving on now to item 7E, Q4 and the end of year performance of report, which is always out of date.
Yeah.
But I'll pass over to Dean to deal with the out of date report.
Okay, well, I'll be brief. This is the end of year performance report for Prosperous Economy for Priority Delivery Plan. So I think a lot of this has moved on now, Chair, so we'll probably just go through it very, very briefly, page by page. Obviously, first page, summary of some of the successes at the end of quarter four. We've talked about the town centre transformation and where we are on that, and the development framework, which has now been approved by Cabinet. Station Gateway, I think there is obviously, it will come back to this committee during this year for an update, Chair. But we have progressed some of the activities linked to the grant funding around the ground investigation works and surveys relating to the County Council's land. We've heard from Alex tonight about the local plans, so there's not really much else to add on that. And UKSPF, I don't know, Michelle, do you want to take a few words on that?
Yes, so the UKSPF programme was right until very close to the deadline, 31st of March, was due to end at the 31st of March, and then we were blessed with a short extension only to the spend. We weren't given any more money because there was obviously some feedback to MHCLG that councils just needed a little bit more time for some projects to finish, because UKSPF is no longer, which means that you can't kind of roll forward anymore. So we were given this small amount of extra time. However, the vast majority of our projects were already complete. The reason I mention it is that we haven't yet come to you with a kind of season-end review. That is coming. It's just because we've got this additional period just to tidy up the last few loose ends. So that's an item that will be coming through. It'll probably be after October, I would say. But as with all of the UKSPF projects that we've been delivering, huge success. Quite sad to see.
Yeah, they've been tremendous.
Agree. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay. Next page.
Sure.
We talked about the town centre transformation. Mentioned that the master plan will be coming forward and towards Station Gateway again. So we're progressing the grant funded elements of that. Haven't concluded land acquisition as yet. So again, we'll bring an update back to the committee. We had intended to do a refresh of our economic growth strategy, but we have slid that back again with other capacity and pressures. We just didn't get around to starting it, and with the town centre transformation work taking priority, and we'll come back to that.
So it was going to start in Q1, but
yeah,
that's delayed again.
It has been delayed.
Yeah.
And associated action was around pipeline of projects, and we're just reviewing that really in light of early discussions around local government reorganisation and things
yeah.
like that. UKSBF, on the next page, we just touched on. Section 106, again, we will come back to that later this year. We're not progressing the Section 106 policy review that we did say we would do due to lack of capacity, and the proposal there has been agreed that we will deprioritise that for 26-27, so that will not appear in this priority review plan for next year. Not that we aren't doing work on Section 106, we're just not doing the review. I think we did talk about that previously.
Yeah,
next page, local plan. Again, we've had the update this evening, an improvement plan for development management.
Yep.
You've got an updated position on that now. We'll keep you updated. I think in terms of the key performance indicators, which page is
it? 79.
Page 81.
Oh, which one?
What's that one it appears at? There's 80, yeah. We haven't got the data around the employment rate. That's linked to an annual release from Office National Statistics. I don't believe that's been
not yet.
We haven't got data for the town centre vacancy rate, and equally we haven't got the data on the housing completions, but I think we will get the housing completion data by the time of the next meeting. Page 81, planning services. Again, these are backward looking, so the major and non-major performance. You have the latest figures and decisions overturned at appeal. As I said earlier, we're doing very well on that metric. So, yeah, that's it.
Anybody got any comments on those? In which case, I'll move over to the work programme. It's our final item of the evening. And there are a few amendments to the minutes of the last meeting that we would like to put to you. Got it. The new proposal is that on the 6th of October, the next meeting, we start with the conclusion of the Task and Finish Working Group on the Evening Economy. So that's Doug's starring role. We have a Q1 performance report, which we always do. And then we're putting in the master plan that we just mentioned. That will be okay for that for October, will it, Dean?
Because it should have gone to
Yeah, I think it will be okay for October.
It'd be good timing from our point of view. So that's Stafford Regeneration and the Master Plan and Stafford Station Gateway. So we'll roll up the whole of those, Michelle, into that one, which will be a full evening on the 6th of October. And then the next meeting, the 17th of December, first of all, is that okay with everybody for the 6th of October?
Sorry, could you repeat that again?
Start again. The first part will be the Evening Economy Task and Finish report, and the normal performance report, and then the master plan, Stafford Station Gateway, and the regeneration of Stafford generally. Those three items will be our substantive items, unless anything changes, which takes us then to the 17th of December programme, which will be the Development Management Progress Review, which is to see how that's moving. That was in October, and we've moved it to fit in Doug's work and Michelle's work, if that's all right. The performance report again, and then to bring in the conservation and heritage update that we asked to be brought to this committee. And because there's so much going on with the local plan, it seems a very good time, and also with the evening economy stuff, it seems a very good time to bring in the conservation and heritage piece that Sam will be producing for us. I don't know if she knows about it yet, but she will do. And then as part of that one, our suggestion is to put the pre-application service update, because that will have finished its pilot stage and been in full throw. Is that day? Does that sound okay for that one? And then going over to the 16th of March, which is obviously quite movable, that will be the local plan update and any updates from the annual business reports, which we always put in. So that the 16th of March at the moment is open to further suggestions. One of them that we did want to bring back at some stage was the tourism, and it may be that we could pencil in another visit from the tourism team at county. Anybody think there are other items that we should be picking up there? No?
When we're going to get the 106 report back.
It's under future items at the moment, according to Jackie. Is that going to be... Who's the expert on this? Dean, it's you.
Well, we've got the infrastructure funding statement in December, but we could put an item on section 106 for March, because it's lighter than the other agendas.
Okay, so you're happy to put that into March?
Yeah. If you have the data in December in terms of the amounts and we did the session on around engagement.
It's been a very vexed subject for a long time, but now seems to be a much less controversial issue, which is very good news. Anybody else got anything else? In which case, I declare the meeting closed and thank everyone for their attendance, including everyone sitting at the back.